The Tarncast, Tarncast. 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 It's the Tarncast, Tarncast. This is the Tarncast.
Hello and welcome to the Tarncast. I'm the host, Laura House. It's good to have you listening today. I'm very excited about our guest. Been trying to get to him for a while. He is an actor. He is a director. He is a writer. I know him from Film Pigs. I actually know him through friends of friends of friends. I was in an insane show called the Anne Heche Monologues with his wife. And that's how I first met him. And then I recently wrote a pilot script and needed someone to be the charming, lovable loser. And a good friend said, you know what would be good? Todd. Even though it called for a big, fat guy with a beard, I was like, Todd can do it. So please welcome my very special guest, Todd Robert Anderson.
Hi. Oh, thanks. Applause. That's
no,
great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's
here, great. Welcome into the studio audience.
Thank you, studio audience.
Yeah, woo! Reminds me of Tom Hanks.
Oh, yeah. Hi.
It's so good to have you. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm a little distracted today. Because I'm waiting for these contractors to come and finish this job that they started and didn't finish. And they did it like a month and a half ago.
Mm.
And they keep calling and saying, oh, we were going to come, but we got something happened. And then they were going to come today. And the guy said he was going to call me. The guy who coordinates the workers, the talent, I guess.
Yeah, that's what they call it. All professions use showbiz names. And then the guys who work for him are extras.
Yeah, they're extras.
And then they're like, can you send your understudy or something to come do this contracting?
Yeah.
Yeah, this sounds like a lot of rich people problems, Todd. So let's move on.
They're not rich people problems. You've seen my house on the outside.
It's
falling apart.
No, contractors really have all the power. That's what I'm not a homeowner myself, but when I talk to them, they're like, my friend was like, they came and they did half the job and they were going to come the next day and I just paid them.
Yeah.
It didn't seem weird. And then now they just don't come.
Right.
It's like they have no concern about repeat business, apparently.
No, but then the weird thing is these guys had sent their sales guy to come by and try to pitch us on another thing. But we don't have the money. I mean, it's like we took out a small loan to get all our windows changed out because they were cracked. I mean, it was
windows.
Like if I get forced, like I have a car and it's 12 years old and I have no intention of getting a new car until that car like literally falls apart.
Dangerous.
Like Bluesmobile style. Just like crumbles.
Got it.
Then I will go, fuck, now I have to go to the car
now
and get
I
the
need
loan
an old
and
Civic.
Do the thing and do the thing. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's what I have, an
no,
old
that's
Civic.
Good. That's oh.
So, but the windows in our house were like cracked. They were falling out. It was something we had to do.
Yeah.
And windows are incredibly expensive.
I see how they would be.
So, but we have a good credit rating, but it's not like I wrote out a check for $19,000.
Wow.
It's like we bought a car.
Oh, wow.
Except they're windows and they don't go anywhere.
No.
But they're a lot nicer. But then I realized because our house is old and hasn't had work done because it was like a fixer-upper when we bought it because that's what we could afford.
Mm-hmm.
But not really the fixing up part after we bought it.
We're just going to keep it like this, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Well, it's bohemian.
Oh,
but
got it.
Like we got backed into a corner. We had to get the windows and now we
you
have
can only
all these
tape them for so long.
Right. Exactly. You run out and then they crack and we have a child.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
And
he's going to escape.
And then, so they put in all the new windows except one, which they forgot, which is what they were supposed to come and finish today. And they were supposed to do our front door. We were getting a new front door as well. And we're waiting on those last two things. But as soon as they put the windows in, I'm looking at the windows outside like, wow, the windows look great. And the windows look like they're being held up by just shit. the house just looks awful now. That's what I've learned. And someone told me that. Oh, yeah, you didn't know that? It's like, no. But then these people sent their salesman to sell us on another $15,000 job. And I'm like, we don't have another $15,000 to make the rest of the house look good.
They're barking up the wrong tree.
They were. And they were giving it, they're like, this is a great deal. We're giving you this great deal. Yeah. Like normally, you know, and they do this bullshit with like, normally you'd pay $28,000, but with this discount and this tick and we'll do
like
this.
Like at the car wash.
Magic. Yeah, exactly.
And we'll do this. I want the $8 car wash. Well, how about the $75 car wash for $48? I just go, fine. Sometimes I give myself a pep talk before I go in, like, I'm not going over 30, I'm not going over 20, like, because I don't do it often. So when I do it, I kind of justify the expense because I'm like, well, twice a year,
I'll do the $40 thing. I get the armor all on the tires and the detailing. Yeah, sure.
But
yeah.
I'm like, so they just wear me down with the nut. I just go, okay, fine, whatever.
When I go to car washes, I'm stony faced.
I want the $3 deal and that's it.
Yeah, give me the $3 wash. You want Armor All on our top? Did I say Armor All?
No.
I said a $3 wash. I just want the wash. Thank you very much. Just give me the ticket.
Just yank it out of his hand. Yeah, when they're... Also, I'm like, I'll have the number two. Well, we can give you the number two plus this plus that. And if you look up there, that's would cost you $3 million anywhere else. But we can give it to you for $27. All right, $27.
$27 versus $3 million.
Yeah, no, you cannot argue with the savings.
No.
Except for I go, I don't know what just happened.
No.
I can only assume. I think they just rinse it, no matter what you do.
Does that happen with, like, precious artwork? I will give you this $3 million Picasso. $27.
Probably not.
I don't
as
think
often.
So.
Probably not as often.
That's what makes you think.
But I think
maybe
it goes the opposite for sure all the time. When they're like, "Oh, this is obviously worth $18 million," and you're like, "My kid painted it with his foot."
My kid doesn't paint anything with his feet. I got to get him on that.
No, you've got to get him on.
He likes to play video games and watch TV and shit. I got to get him painting with his feet.
Oh, yeah. No, get him doing something interesting. Well, or drumming with his feet. Something good with his feet.
With his feet.
Yeah, something good.
Because there's that, like, 9-year-old, like, Chinese kid or something who's, like, playing, like, jazz concerts.
Oh, a prodigy? You don't want a prodigy, though.
No?
You don't want a prodigy.
Are they, like, they're, like, autistic
they don't,
or something?
No, they don't grow up into geniuses. And so then you just basically have a weirdo.
Like a weirdo?
That's what I've come to understand.
But this 9-year-old's like touring the world.
No, it's going to be great till he's 12.
Right.
Or till it catches up till he's like 25. And there's other pianists
that are
really good. And then he's like, oh, I thought it was special.
Well, the
and
other question I have about
trying
that.
Trying to get on a quiz show.
Yeah, that kid though, like the jazz he plays is soft jazz. It's not my kind of jazz. It's like Spyro Gyra.
Yeah, no, he's crap. He's going to get to, like, a reasonable age. Uh-huh. So, like, let's say he's going to have a good, you know, 11 years of being special.
Right.
And then he's going to get to an age where a lot of people his age do what he does. And a lot of people just go, that's terrible music.
Right, right. Well, I wonder if when he gets to be a teenager, he'll be like,
this
soft jazz is bullshit.
He'll get real punk rock with that.
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. No, I'm reading a book where it's about a prodigy, and he makes that case of, like, very few prodigies are actual geniuses. And they kind of, as they kind of graduate high school, they're like, oh. Like, people kind of catch up with, like, it was a big deal that I could anagram anything and spell anything and, memorize everything I saw. And now, like,
That's true.
It's not.
You don't want to peak at 9.
No, no, no. So let your kid just keep playing video games.
Yeah, I'll let
him. I think there's a lesson.
Yeah.
Speaking of your kid, I brought you bugles.
I'm going to eat one on mic.
I think you should.
They say on podcasts you should eat crunchy foods on mic.
That's the sound of 7th grade.
They're so good.
But I felt like, so knowing I was going to interview you, I did some research. I searched my soul and your IMDb. Those two places I looked.
Does your soul have Google?
No, no. My soul is just, it's just like the depths of consciousness.
Oh, okay.
But no, there's no Google.
There's no Google.
No. So it's a drawback. but I wanted a Diet Dr. Pepper. This podcast is brought to you, by the way, by Diet Dr. Pepper.
Oh, that's great. You've got it quite a sponsor.
Yeah, no.
Most podcasts have like porn shops and dispensaries.
This is Diet Dr. Pepper. And they, but I really, it meant a lot to me to go, well, I was like, I'm going to bring Todd something.
Mm-hmm.
What's it going to be? And it was important to me to pick the best thing out of the gas station. You know, just not fancy, obviously, but just like, what's the what that he's going to go like trail mix that doesn't have raisins? Oh, my God. Thank you. They all have raisins. I have whatever the thing is.
Right, right.
And I really, again, soul searching, I really tried to tap into a psyche and some kind of or just like, well, like I told you, I wanted to get the Coke that said Britney.
Right.
And I was like, that makes me laugh. I'll bet he doesn't drink much sugar.
I don't drink a lot. Occasionally I'll have a Coke.
Yeah, I was like, okay, what is he? And I went through, I was like, a Red Bull, a Monte, I go, no, and then landed on Bugles and was like, guys love Bugles.
They do. Why do they love Bugles?
Guys love Bugles, I think, and this comes from my experience with boys starting from sixth grade on, I think, but because it's a toy and a chip. It's a little hat for your fingers.
Yeah, you can
and
put them on your fingers.
Yeah, it's a game and a toy. Like, the guy, they can put them on themselves and dress up their hands as wizards.
Yeah.
And then they can, like, have a little 10 wizard army and then eat them off. And then, but guys go crazy for Bugles. So, not to say you're a typical guy, but I bet he hasn't had it for a while.
I'm, like, mostly a typical guy. Well, I guess I'm not because I don't, like, watch sports and shit.
Oh, really? No sport?
Not really.
What are your interests? So you are a professional actor.
I am a professional actor.
And you love film, like, way more than I do.
I love movies.
Which I find interesting. But are there other, like, outside of show busy things, stuff that you do, like croquet, or you love mini golf?
I'll play mini golf or croquet. I enjoy a bocce ball game.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I enjoy lawn
croquet
games.
Croquet without the... Okay, lawn games. Yeah, that's croquet basically without the mallet, right? You're just throwing the ball.
You're hucking the ball.
The other one.
Yeah.
Oh, you're hucking it. Oh,
well,
excuse
it's
me.
Like you have...
Thanks for correcting
you have
me.
A few balls.
Uh-huh.
Well, in bocce ball, it's called hucking.
I did not know that.
It's not. I made that up. But you have, all it is you huck a little white ball, you know, to one end of the lawn,
mm-hmm.
and then you try to get all your balls as close to that white ball as you can, the bigger colored balls.
Racist.
Yeah, it's super racist.
Everybody get near the white ball, if you know what I'm saying. If you want a job. What? So I'm legitimately fascinated by your career. I am, because the first time, you're going to learn a lot about how I've been watching you in a way that you would never suspect.
Okay.
Not through your broken windows.
No.
But the first time I saw, and I have this a lot, because I'm a professional, I guess I'd say I make a living as a TV writer,
mm-hmm.
But I started as a stand-up comic and I was on an MTV show and stuff, but my own, showbiz jobs or it doesn't register on me at all. Like I'm never like, oh, I starred on a TV show, like, ever. Like, I don't connect with it.
You
at
don't
all.
Think of yourself that way?
No, I don't
even
think of myself.
You've been on TV and stuff.
Even though it's been, yes, a long time. But I register it with other people. So we had mutual friends, and then I saw you on Will and Grace. And I just remember being like, oh my God, like, he's really doing it. Like, I had starred on a series a couple of years before, but I was like, oh my God, like, he's on Will and Grace.
He has one line on Will and Grace.
Well, it didn't matter. I mean, you beat out 100 people for that line on Will and Grace. Also, think of, in a sense, of all the people who your agent didn't even sign or who you didn't even get
that's a good line
on Will and Grace.
Yeah,
like, Will and Grace was the number one sitcom at that moment, and you were on it.
True.
Like, how did that happen? And that was when I looked it up, that was your second credit or something like that. It was an earlier credit.
Yeah, I guess it
like
would be,
99, you've worked pretty consistently since 99. Like, how long had you been in Hollywood and trying this, and how did it come about? How did it feel? Did it freak you out? Was it easy?
My sense of chronology is bad, but...
So, meaning you think it happened next month?
No, not that bad. I can't remember where it came in the, like, stream of...
Okay, when,
like,
did you come to Hollywood?
Bit parts I have. I got out here in 95.
Okay. So 4 years...
Yeah.
Before you got that one line. So that's like a year, a word.
Yeah. It took me 4 years to get one line.
See, that's... And I only mention that not to make you feel bad, but for people listening.
It takes a while.
It does sometimes, like, it's shocking.
Yeah. To be fair, I had, like, 8 lines in Blast from the Past.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, that's it. That was your first.
That was my first.
And that was a movie with Alicia Silverstone. Then your second credit was Clueless, the TV show.
That's correct.
Was there any connection? Because Alicia Silverstone was in Blast from the Past and in the movie Clueless.
As far as I know, no.
All right.
Unless, because she had nothing to do with the TV show. So, I don't know. Maybe the casting director was like, I'll watch Blast from the Past. And, this guy's worked with Alicia Silverstone. So maybe I'll call him on the show that Alicia Silverstone is loosely related to. I don't know. I don't know.
I like to think that's what happened. I like to think there was an association with you and Alicia Silverstone.
The guy, I played a security guard, and the guy
on Clueless, the show,
and the guy who played, it was two security guards talking to the, like, leads obnoxiously, kind of like perverty, weird security guards. Uh-huh. And that guy, that other guy, was Jim Rash.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Who has gone on to win an Academy Award.
Yeah, for writing The Descendants.
Right, exactly.
And he's on Community.
Yes.
Big Groundlings guy,
yeah. Very funny, very, very nice guy. Mm-hmm. I haven't actually seen him. Actually, I did see him not too long ago.
I crossed paths with him quite a bit.
Yeah, I was at a premiere party for You're the Worst and Married, the two FX shows, and he was there because he's friends with the lead of Married, because they both won the Academy Award together.
Yes, I see why they would.
They're
still
like
be
really friendly. Yeah, but I didn't. I wanted to talk to him.
I guess he would be pretty friendly with Nat Faxon.
Yeah, they're very friendly together, Nat and him. Nat's a very nice man. I got to talk to Nat.
It would be so weird if you were a jerk.
It would be weird.
If you met Nat Faxon, who, like, just seems like everything about him is just like, I just rolled out of bed and I want to go surfing. Like, but not dumb.
No.
But he has a very, like, he's half surfer, half your totally best friend you can count on or something. Like, he has a very interesting quality, but it'd be so weird if you were like, hey, Nat, how you doing? Who said you could talk to me? Like, if he had, like, this giant attitude.
That's always my concern.
Super weird.
At things like that, that I get invited to. Because, you know, I'm not, like, a series regular. I'm just, like, a recurring guest star. So I'm kind of low on the totem pole there. And I do get concerned that people are going to get... Like, I sort of commandeered Judy Greer's husband for quite some time at that party.
That's
fun. I think she wanted to get him away from me.
I think
she was like, okay, come on. Okay, we've had our fun.
Like, saw it as a hostage situation.
Yeah. Oh. She was saving him from me, which I appreciate, because I can be very difficult.
Well, I hope she'll come in here and save me at the end of this.
Can you Good imagine? Luck.
At the end, Judy Greer shows up. Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
You've got this other appointment, I think.
You came over here on your own free... You weren't thinking.
So Blast from the Past, how'd that happen?
That happened.
How long had you been here? Did it blow? Were you just like, oh my God, I'm going to do movies all the time? Like, what?
That's one of my more fun casting stories.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of long-winded, but somewhat interesting. I was working at that point at a sugar-free bakery and gift emporium.
Okay.
In Studio City.
Okay, great.
For minimum wage. A lot of stars came in there, so, like stars.
Oh, of course, a sugar-free bakery.
And then my, you know how you're, when you're in the showbiz and you're starting out, your parents are very concerned, and they make suggestions.
And also when you've been doing it for 10, 15 years, then they still get, they very get, concerned.
They get more. And then they, like, and cross then they just, a bridge
they,
of,
they just surrender.
I fucking you know, don't know.
Like, I'll be dead by the time you're starving in the street when you're 50, so fine.
So fuck it, So,
okay, good. We have the same parents.
Yeah, exactly. So, in addition to advice like, hey, have you thought about, like, getting on a CSI show?
Oh,
you know,
yes.
One of those?
Yes, yeah.
Why don't you do one of those Law and Order shows?
Parent advice is amazing.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
I'm going to call Dick Wolf right now and see if I can get a cop role on Law and Order SVU.
How about this advice? You should write a book that Oprah loves.
Oh, that's helpful.
That was a good piece of
advice.
That's
such a good idea.
A friend of mine was told, he had told his roommate, you know, about a screenplay, and his friend was like, that's not a good idea. You know what you should do? You should write a Judd Apatow movie. And it's just like the worst advice
that doesn't
you can
make
go.
Any sense.
You should be a different person and do what they do.
That's like saying, you know, you should write and direct a Woody Allen picture.
You should invent electricity, but there already is a...
yeah, you're right.
You know what would have been something if you were Steve Jobs?
Uh-huh.
That would have been something.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay.
So, and then the other thing they would do is they would have a friend of a friend of a friend who was loosely connected to somebody who was connected to somebody who knew something about the industry, as we call
it. Your parents would do this.
My parents, yes. Uh-huh. Like, they had, like, a friend who knew this Broadway producer named Manny Eisenberg who produced Neil Simon plays.
Uh-huh.
And this friend of theirs is this very wealthy guy. And I get the sense that Manny owed him some kind of favor, but they set up a meeting, and I'm like, going in to meet a Broadway producer, I don't know what good that's going to do me. But I went, and we had this, it was such a fucking, like, I have to do this conversation from his end. Mm-hmm. And it was just like bored, like spewing cliches.
Oh, gosh.
You know, well, you need to pay your dues. I think he suggested I get into a movie with Robert De Niro.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah. Good. Oh, go. Good. Okay, good. Oh, yeah, good. I should. You're right. I'm going to run out and get. So this is a Broadway producer giving me this bullshit advice.
Yes.
But then when I moved out here, my dad had a friend who had a daughter who was a casting director's assistant.
Mm-hmm.
So they connected us together.
Oh, that's good.
And she very politely came out to hang out. And at the time, I was living with a guy who happened to have gone to high school with her.
Oh, okay.
So that all worked out socially. Right. So she felt like if that hadn't happened, nothing would have happened with this connection.
Mm-hmm.
But that just like coincidentally made her comfortable.
Okay.
And then she asked me if I wanted to come in and file headshots like a couple times a week.
Oh, wow.
For her boss, Denise Chamian.
Okay.
So I would go in a couple times a week after I was done at the Sugar Free Bakery and Gift and Porn.
Yes. So and you smelled great.
I smelled great. Smelled like coffee.
Vanilla.
And it was
everything
delicious.
Comforting.
Yes. And aromatherapy candles.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
All these wonderful
things.
Amazing. And TV stars. There were lots of TV stars.
Yeah.
I could wind up smelling like a Janine Garofalo.
Wow.
Or a Richard Dreyfuss.
Oh, that's
you know,
fun.
If
wow.
I got close enough,
that's
like the scent would get on me. And,
wow.
Yeah. So,
I love that scent.
Which, Dreyfuss or Garofalo?
Like a mix of it. I feel like it'd be like a ashy, spicy.
Like it would
be. Like a smoky, like a, with a singe. Like
yeah,
a,
and a little bit of depression.
Like a bite to it, yeah.
Yeah.
Like a, definitely a low buzz on there, and yeah. But smart, you'd smell smart.
Yeah, you
sure,
would smell
interesting.
Smart. Yeah, exactly. So, in any event, I started filing headshots, and I would keep the office entertained by, and this is like throwing my fellow brethren under the bus, by making fun of bad headshots.
Oh, good, yeah. Oh, yeah, of course, everybody does.
So, yeah, and yeah, I was started like a wall, and I would tack shit up.
The
like,
wall
people
of shame.
Would say, like, literally, actors are dumb. They would send in, like they didn't have their headshots done, but they had hand model shots done. The show, the first show I filed for was called High Incident. It was a cop show produced by Steven Spielberg. And people were sending in hand model shots and whatnot. But then, like, you get the character actor shots where they have, like, the three extra pictures on the side of the main picture.
Oh, goofy. I was going to say the quad, the, yeah, the four, and one is, like, a, you know, I'm in a leather jacket, and I'm tough, like, all just very cliched, you know, or one is, like, I'm super sweet and holding a giant big lollipop. Like, they're, like, with a weird prop. And
my favorite one that I filed was from... William Catt.
Oh, that dude, yeah, the greatest American hero.
I think they actually auditioned him for the show, but I may be wrong. But anyway, I was like, when you're done with this headshot, you have to get a weird headshot. It was him in the in like the woods, and like he was on a rock in the middle of a creek. Like in a squatted like camel cigarette man.
William Catt.
Yeah,
like a Marlboro man.
Yeah, like in the but it was more like camel because camel's like the camel guy was Marlboro Man was on a horse in the desert.
But what, the camel wasn't the camel just guy a was always like camel? On a mountain.
Well, before the cartoon camel, there was a he looked like William Catt except with like a mustache and he had curly blonde hair.
Oh, wow.
And he would always be like on a mountain just having a smoke or like in the woods. Like he was always hiking
all the places
and smoking.
Smokers love.
Yeah.
Smoke. If you know anything, it's that smokers are outdoorsy. So that's exactly.
Well, these days they have to be because you can't smoke inside.
That's true. You they've been forced. Yeah. It'd just be a smoker shivering
in
like
New
15
York. Yeah.
feet away from
that's
the door.
The new camel guy.
Yeah,
the guy
that's
in New York in a parka trying
just
to...
up against the curb, getting splashed from the bus going by.
So anyway, they would laugh, and then she was casting a movie called. Saving Private Ryan. I don't know if you've heard of that show. So I auditioned for the role that would ultimately go to Giovanni Ribisi. But she did like my work. So like her next project or the project after that or whatever was Blast from the Past. So she called me in and she didn't have me well, Spielberg casts off tape. You never like go into a room with Spielberg anymore. So I sort of got on tape and she liked it.
She was exhausted by people freaking out around
him. Exactly. So she just sent me on a tape to his house. So I was like, oh, that's cool. Steven Spielberg saw me on his big fancy TV. So that was cool. But then this was Hugh Wilson. You know, the guy who directed Blast from the Past, from the guy who did WKRP in Cincinnati.
What?
And Police Academy.
Exciting.
Yeah, very exciting.
That didn't hurt.
Yeah. He was there, and I read for this part, and that's how I got that.
Oh, that's
but,
great.
See, the reason why I gave you all those details is so your listeners know it's a long series of... like weird,
weird
coincidences
connections.
And reaching out and trying to and then you know and putting in time and then out of nowhere someone says oh okay because you need in this
which
business,
is the story
that you need
the
a benefactor
well the details change but that's to me that's always the story and what I would suggest as a takeaway for that too for this business but probably for lots of businesses is to show up like you did this bakery job and you knew this person you know you were connected to this person and they were like do you want to file headshots and had you been like no I'm an actor I'm not going to file headshots at some office like I'm not going to have a casting director see me as a filer when I'm a you know I'm an actor and I'm not or whatever it is like if like you just show up. You go, yeah, I'll totally do that. And, like, do you want to put this on tape? Like, yeah, all right, yeah, we'll do – okay. Oh, I auditioned for this. I can get it. Okay, I'm not
going
to freak out and quit or, you know, go, oh, I get, oh, that casting person hates me.
I did stalk Giovanni Ribisi for quite some time in a threatening manner.
Of course.
But, you know, I never went through with the murder.
No, of course. We all have feelings, and you have to work out your feelings.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
You do.
I am curious, so I want to ask on a little deeper level of, like, when you, let's say when you got Blast from the Past, like, what was your plan to be an actor, or did you have one? Because you strike me as a pretty, like, have a good head on your shoulders, so I'm wondering if you were, like, what did you think your career would be like in Hollywood?
I thought I would be in the movies. I mean, I thought, you know, that was my ideal place because it's the medium I like the most. But once I got to L.A., and sort of realized, and I'm not going to call it structure, mm-hmm. you know, but how things work, I kind of let go of.
Mm.
It became about who's going to give me money.
Oh, yeah.
To act, which is why I wanted to, you know, I was doing a play in which I played a Jewish convict rapist.
Oh, all right.
Casting against type a little bit.
I guess so, yeah.
And arbitrarily, a commercial agent was there.
Mm-hmm.
And despite the fact that I was raping someone in this fucking play, was like...
This guy seems like he'd work at Best Buy.
Exactly.
I can, oh yeah, I can use this. He seems like he'd be the behind the counter to Carl's Jr.
Yeah.
He'd be a dad trying to buy a car.
And I give this guy full props for that.
That's
like, he
amazing.
Was seeing past the mm-hmm. horrible things I was doing on stage.
Or you weren't very good at it.
Or I wasn't very good, maybe.
But did you seem like a friendly rapist?
It wasn't that bad.
I can. I mean, pressing charges seems extreme.
He was ultimately polite.
But he seemed like a nice everyman rapist.
He was like a Tom Hanksy rapist. But yeah, whether it was the performance was terrible, whatever it is, despite the fact that either I was just terrible or a convincing. Either way, he saw the look and said, commercials.
That's so great.
So that's really how I started getting paid and got my SAG card, is I started doing commercials.
Mm-hmm. And you've done how many commercials?
I have no idea.
Would it be near 100?
It ballpark, yeah. Probably, wow. Like probably around 80 to 85, somewhere.
That's amazing.
In there. Yeah. If I count, like, the occasional spots that don't go to air and all
yeah,
that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I think anything you book, you count.
Okay.
You count that.
All right. Then, yeah. Then, like, 85, 90. Yeah.
That's really impressive. Oh. And that is a good head on your shoulders. Because that's, I think it's, this business is really tough.
Yeah, it is.
And it really does take a smart person. Like, people have dreams. You know, when we're like I just visited my dad, and I'm from Grand Prairie, Texas. So I just visited him. And, you know, you start, like, go home to the small town, and, you know, it just invigorates those memories and the, you know, like, oh, when I was 8, I wanted this and that,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Whatever. And so, of course, you know, from where you sit in America or whatever and watch TV, you have one aspect of what Hollywood is. Or if you just watch the Emmys, you go, oh, I guess people just take pictures of you
right,
all the time.
Right,
or, you know,
right.
Like,
yeah.
You just get this glimpse of, you know, very tip of the iceberg, and usually, like, the glamorous part of it and the whatever. Like, oh, I guess it's just like this. And, you know, out here is really, like, I've learned it's so unexciting, because it's, like, a blue-collar work ethic is the best kind of work ethic to have, of like, okay, yeah, I'll absolutely do this. And this was less exciting than what I did last week, but whatever, that's what we do. And, you know, and just being very, like, humble and doing the work and working extra and, like, all that. Because my deal like that was with, as a stand-up, I'm a writer and a performer.
Mm-hmm.
And I could not figure out how to make a livable wage performing anything.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Stand-up is...
Well, stand-up, but I was also, like, acting and auditioning
right,
and stuff.
Right,
and I was like, what do you have to book, like, 20 things a year to make, you know, like, one big one?
Right,
or
right.
And I was like, I don't even...
It's worse now than when I started.
Really?
Yeah, the money.
Harder
yeah.
to... Oh, because of the less, because there's...
Yeah, I mean, you can still make decent money doing, you know, national commercials, mm-hmm. but I honestly don't know how long that's going to last, because
oh, really?
Like just the climate's so different with the internet and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And you know, SAG-AFTRA, excuse me, their contracts aren't great with the internet stuff. You just don't make that much money off of internet stuff or stuff they play before movies or
yeah.
whatever.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
still
yeah, yeah.
like, it's got to be on the 3 or 5, how many ever major networks.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
you get paid less for cable.
Yeah.
You only get paid a lot for the national
Those
spots.
Big national.
Which why they can't navigate that and just, like, make it the same amount of money for all those. Because, you know, they air them everywhere.
Yeah, it's, yeah, it's like, yeah, yeah.
I don't understand how they've let the producers of those things strong arm them into
The corporation definitely, because, you know, it was part of the writer's strike a few years ago, like, corporations definitely have the upper hand now of, like, well, we're just not going to pay you for that. Oh, okay. All right, well, I guess.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, then we'll strike. All right, well, there's plenty of people not in your union that'll love to do this. And it's like, oh.
Yeah, you're right.
And it's kind of happening everywhere, just the corporatized everything. But, yeah, I think that's really smart. For me, the first time I got hired to write on a TV show, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to keep doing this. Because I was like, this is a livable wage. Like,
yeah, yeah.
This is, this makes sense to me.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, like, as you go, like, personally, because I find this business can be sort of draining. It can be emotionally draining, and it can be, like, when people say it's hard, it's like, that doesn't even begin to describe like, it can be hard to, like, get out of bed on some given day or whatever. Like, have you had, like, a big disappointment? And how do you, like, work through that stuff? Like, how do you, when times are, like, lean or you're between things, like, what do you do to pick yourself up or keep going?
Well, one thing that I do is make sure that I am doing stuff that I want to do.
Okay.
And I, you know, it's like I have this Film Pigs web series.
Okay.
And I do podcasts and I write.
Mm-hmm.
Even though my writing isn't, you know, professional, it's sort of like if I have a hobby, it's that.
Okay.
Because nobody will pay me for my writings. Mm-hmm. But I write, you know, what I want to write. Mm-hmm. I'm not like Stephen Falk. When he switched from acting to writing,
mm-hmm.
he very, you know, pointedly became a student of the industry, mm-hmm. is the way he described it. And he started reading Variety every day and just learning all he could about, you know, what got bought and what,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I've never done that. Mm-hmm. I can only write, like, absolutely from my own perspective, as opposed to trying to fit. I mean, and he's been doing it so long,
mm-hmm.
it's sort of his perspective makes sense in a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just different in that way. So when I write, and then that's the other thing, it is a hobby, and I don't mm-hmm. want to, like, put pressure on it to be, like, something that I need to make money off of all of a sudden.
So part of what you do to, like, fuel yourself is, like, you keep your own, you maintain your own creative endeavors that you enjoy, that there's no there's no notes.
Right.
There's no changing the schedule or, you know, any of that.
And it's not that I'm, you know, it's all super self-indulgent stuff. It's mm-hmm. like me trying to create stuff. And usually it's, you know, no budget stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still me trying to create stuff, me doing what I want to do, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, with acting, like, the acting gigs I get are, you know, I would say pretty rarely something that, like, is absolutely in tune with
kind of
my artistic self,
kind of fulfilling,
versus my craftsman self.
Oh, okay.
I mean, my, like, acting for me as a living is a craft, and I'm a craftsman, and when someone hires me, I get paid to do a certain amount of things and get it right.
Oh, that is such a great attitude, I think. Like, and then you keep your notion of, like, creative fulfillment separate.
Right.
So, and sometimes they align. Similar, like, but if you were a carpenter, if you built desks and someone's like, build me a desk, you wouldn't agonize over, like, how do you like the desk? Are you sitting in the desk? Right. You're sitting,
right,
you know,
right.
But, like, that's what actors do over their jobs. You would just be like, I crafted you this desk. It's what you asked for. And
right.
here you go. And you got the desk.
Yeah. I mean, I think when a carpenter crafts a desk, you know, he'll get notes on the, well, we wanted the desk to do this, and then he has to make adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that's what I do as mm-hmm. an actor. I do my preparation
that's
work
so great.
And I come set ready. And
like, you keep your self-esteem out of it.
Yes.
Like, you're just like, this is the job.
When
I
I'm
do this
part
job.
Of a project, I'm there to serve. I think that's what people mean when they say, like, humble, you know, mm-hmm. be humble and
yeah,
ready
to keep your
give.
Ego out of it.
Yeah, you're there to serve the project. Mm-hmm. I absolutely believe. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes, you know, when you read the how to make it in Hollywood things, mm-hmm. for one, don't believe anybody's. That's my philosophy. Mm-hmm. Don't believe anybody's goddamn advice about how to make it in mm-hmm. Hollywood. It's all, take it all with a grain of salt. There's mm-hmm. some stuff to learn, but for the most, there's no way. There's no formula. Mm-hmm. There just really isn't a formula.
There's no formula.
But a lot of people, you know, I see on social media, say, you know, the people who are not sarcastic and sardonic, like mm-hmm. myself, or mm-hmm. like, honestly, here's you. And it's usually, you know, give of thyself to Hollywood. I think if you're a craftsman, like I say, you're already there. You don't mm-hmm, need to like mm-hmm. have this spiritual philosophy of mm-hmm. giving yourself mm-hmm, unto mm-hmm. Hollywood. I don't think that's a healthy thing for an artist to do mm-hmm. because, like we said before, this is a corporate run.
Yeah, like keep
town.
Your soul out of it.
Yeah, yeah. You keep yeah. your soul out of it. You keep, you know, you gotta keep your artistic self protected and separate. I hear that from stand-ups all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're doing stand-up, you got to protect your act and the integrity of your sense of humor. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, I think of everything in showbiz, stand-up comedy is the one thing where it's just you, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, and you can hack it up, I guess, and be an imitator. But, mm-hmm. like, really success in stand-up, both artistic, I think, and financial, but mm-hmm. you know better than me. But mm-hmm. it always seems to be about you are you and you're presenting that mm-hmm. and you have to kind of maintain, that's got to be tricky, maintaining yourself in that realm.
Yeah, I think it is tricky, and I think it drives people insane, and I think there's a lot of addiction, and I think because you're doing all that. That's what I found, is like you're doing all that and you're often doing it out of town where you don't know anybody and the drinks are free.
Right.
So it's really a perfect storm.
Well, yes,
for,
a nightclub.
For personal
yeah.
problems.
Yeah, my God.
Yeah. So like, you know, like, yeah, the, yeah, it's yeah, stand-up is sort of fascinating. Even on the, of like, you know, if you're an outsider, as a comic, if you're an outsider, like sort of commenting on life and the world, and then the world decides, you know, after 15 years of you doing this, it loves you, and now you're in the middle of it.
Right.
Now what do you do?
Right.
You know, like, I mean, Jay Leno, like, is fascinating to me in that he was like, I'm only going to spend my stand-up money, not my TV money. Like, have you heard that?
No.
Like, he was like, because he...
his warehouse of fancy
yeah,
cars.
But he was like, I identify as a stand-up. I'm going to keep doing that. I'm, you know, I'm just going to put my TV money away and I just spend my stand-up money. Like, that was...
So he doesn't spend his Tonight Show money, or does he consider that stand-up money?
No, I think he didn't. He was said that he was like, just his stand-up money. Because he would go to Vegas and... I mean, being on the Tonight Show ups your stand-up money also.
Oh, but, well, yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah, but it's... yeah, it's a weird thing all over the place. If you're not successful, and if you're super successful, and if you're yeah, all
well,
kinds of weird stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that Hollywood is certainly a reflection of the United States at large, as far as its class structure system is concerned.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Well, I really think that the middle class. I mean, I can't speak for stand-up, but I can speak for acting. I mean, I think mm-hmm. the middle class of actors has dwindled quite a bit.
Oh, I see.
You know
see.
What I mean? It's
so
like
it's the rich
either
the,
you're a prince or you're a pauper.
Oh,
the like
interesting.
The like people like me, and I kind of consider myself, you know, a working actor who makes a living, mm-hmm. just not a great living. It's mm-hmm. it's like a you know middle class,
yeah,
American middle class living basically. Which
I think a lot of writing and acting is that, and I think it's like a healthy spot to get in mentally.
Yeah.
You know, like to go, oh, okay, I see how you make a living.
Well,
doing
I think in writing that's
not
probably
everybody gets
true,
to buy an island.
Yeah. No.
Or whatever.
No, but I think in acting, I mean, like, you know, a lot of the working actors I know are you know, their whole financial life is so touch and go.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just like, am I going to make enough money to make my insurance? Am mm-hmm. I going to make enough money to make my rent or mortgage this month? I mean, they never know.
Yeah.
as opposed to, I mean, and but then you're a series regular on a TV show, and it, like,
all
everything
turn around
changes
really fast. Yeah,
and that, like, that difference is what I'm sort of noticing.
Oh, I see.
There's,
and it's fascinating to watch. I, like, literally watched a few friends go through that, and it's, I mean, like, email, like, I'm thinking of three people right now, but it's like one of them, I would get email blasts from them of, like, you guys, you know, is there any work? Like, just shaking the trees for any mm-hmm. kind of work. And then a couple years later on a TV show, and then ran into this person at, like, you know, like, out at a restaurant. And she was like, oh, you know, we don't know if we're coming back. So, you know, like maybe the first season gets you out of debt. You know, right. And you're still not making the big money or the whatever, but then it's like season five and they're at the Emmys and then they're nominated for this and that. And then, you know, like, then you're seeing them in People magazine and you're like, oh, that was my friend who 5 years ago, you know, or
yeah,
7
exactly.
years ago was like, does anybody have any leads on any jobs? I really need something. Like, it's, yeah, it's fascinating.
That is fascinating. And, that's, I don't know what you were saying before about, because I always used to hear, you know, showbiz is so hard, you know, when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I'm going to be an actor.
Yeah.
And be in the movies. And showbiz is so hard. And you hear that, and that only makes you want to go do it.
Yeah.
More to be like, yeah, I don't fucking care how hard it is.
There's a cockiness.
Yeah, I can do it. Well, you got, and what?
Well, maybe you made a bunch of mistakes. That's
yeah.
what I thought of it. Like, at 22
exactly.
or whatever, like, 40-year-olds
right.
would be like, I don't know, it's really hard, and I'd be like, for you, maybe.
Right.
Like, in my head.
Right.
Like, in my head.
Totally, yeah.
Probably out loud sometimes.
I think I was out loud about it.
I think out loud.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't like me.
Yeah, yeah. I made a lot of enemies as a youthful person.
Just a terrible
I grew out of that. By the time I turned 25, I was like, I gotta stop talking
yeah,
to people that
I
way.
Yeah, I am really tearing people down.
There's no need for it. but I just think it's so complicated. What is hard about it is mm-hmm. so deeply complicated. And, it, you know, a lot of it is just the way that the Hollywood system works is so wonky.
Yeah.
And it's constantly changing.
Well,
it's never the same.
It's not a meritocracy. And, like, I live with my boyfriend who also works in the industry, and, like, he works a lot on reality stuff, and but he writes and he wants to work on shows as a writer. And I cringe sometimes because it's like, that's not necessarily some great seat to be sitting in every day necessarily, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's easy to romanticize. You know, you watch the show and it's a finished part. You're like, oh, wish I'd written on Breaking Bad or whatever.
Right, right.
You don't know what it was like to sit in the room on Breaking Bad. Like, you don't know.
Maybe, yeah, no.
Maybe it was amazing. Maybe it was not amazing. Like,
well,
you
it's
know.
Like, it's like, I remember when Arrested Development
uh-huh.
ended, like, the story I heard was that everybody in the writer's room was just so fucking happy.
Oh.
Because it
uh-huh.
was, like, it was,
oh,
because like,
it was crazy.
It was crazy, and the yeah. showrunner was hardcore, and he'd keep them there at all 4 a.m. if he didn't think things were good. So
oh, yeah.
when it was over and they got to go do, like, a Charlie Sheen sitcom, they were like, fucking hey.
Yeah, that's
I got my life back.
Yeah, that's usually the story on sitcoms. And then it's funny, too, because you kind of just want to retire and do, like, a Disney show. Like,
yeah.
I've been on a meeting before where this woman had written on one of the longest-running sitcoms of all time. And then 10 years later, she was at this Disney show, and so I was interviewing for it. And she was like, look, I'm making the money I was making 10 years ago. And generally, you want to make
more.
But sure. She goes, I don't even care. We're done at 6. I go home, I'm with my daughter, I have a life. And it was like, you know, like, there's plenty of people that are just, you know, like, I don't care if people I love have never heard of this show. You know, like,
right.
on one hand, you're like, oh, I wish I would have made Lost or whatever
right.
people were talking
yeah.
about. And then on another hand, you're like, you know, I'll be on some Disney XD. You know, and you're glad to have it. And
mm-hmm.
I, yeah, getting aging in the business is fascinating to me, because the stuff that, like, you know, your first couple years, you're like, ugh, this is, you're just so full of opinions. Right. Of, that's stupid, and why that, and this is dumb, and, you know, then later you're like, ugh, thank God for these three lines on the blob, you know, on the whatever, because now I have healthcare for 2015.
Well, honestly, like, when I started, you know, I was like, well, I'm just going to do these commercials, you know, until I get my series regular role.
Eric Stoltz, which
never happened. I don't want to be Eric Stoltz.
Who would you want to be in movies? If you could have someone's career.
Like, I don't know. Someone who's got career longevity, I guess. I mean, I just answered that question.
You've never thought about it?
I just answered that question on a podcast last week, and it was... Michael Keaton, but I don't want, like, Michael Keaton after Batman Returns. I want, like, Michael Keaton through the 80s.
Night Shift.
Yeah, Night Shift. And then, I thought about, like, Michael Keaton. You know his career I'd like? Kurt Russell's.
Oh, yeah. Then okay, I got it. Because
that guy's been around forever, and he did a million things, and they were different. And also, I love Kurt Russell.
Yeah, all right.
But
it's a cool guy.
Yeah.
Or like a John Goodman.
Yeah, John Goodman, Paul Giamatti would be fine.
Sure,
anybody like that.
I once said to someone, this was years ago, but I was like, I would just love a career, like, Kathy Griffin. And she was, like, on Suddenly Susan at the time.
Right, right.
And I was like, just, you know, like, she's the friend, she does stand-up, she does this, she does that, you know, like, Kathy Griffin. And he goes, that is so funny. I was on the phone with Kathy Griffin last week, who said she wanted the career of Terry Garr. And I was like, oh, maybe you're good luck.
That's funny. I was talking, I don't know, do you know who Shane Nickerson is?
Yeah.
I was talking to him, and he had a really kind of insightful bit about that very thing. He's like, pretty much wherever you are in showbiz, you're always going to be looking at the next person saying, why don't I have that?
Mm-hmm.
So he said, I have pointedly stopped doing that.
Oh, nice.
And just, I'm glad with what I have, and I'm happy for other people's, like, if their abundance is greater than mine, I'm happy for them. But I'm happy with
He's glad to be a Shane Nickerson.
He's glad to be Shane Nickerson.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a really good idea.
Yeah. No, it's ultimately the best way to think, clearly. But it's also, I don't know, I just find it interesting to go, where would I, you know, like, what's a path or a trajectory, you know, or whatever it is. Because, yeah, mine is, careers unfold in the most bizarre way, which can seem really scary to me on any given day, and then can also seem really kind of exciting on any given day. Like when the jobs, when I just went home, I lost my mom a few years ago, but I went out with her two best friends. My mom was Carol. Her best friends are Verna and Norma. I like real names. And so I went out with Vernon and Norman. They wanted to catch up on me because my mom would have been telling them whatever. And they were asking me about this. And I used to hate to go home if I was in between projects. Like, I felt...
Because you have nothing going on. You know?
Yeah, it was just mortifying to me. And also being from, like, middle class people where you're supposed to have a job every day of your life.
Yeah.
And it's weird to kind of, and I feel like I felt really self-conscious for years that I just sounded pathetic and, you know, when like you're trying to spit, I'm between things, but I mean, but I got like irons in the fire and, you know, and like, and I would rather sound pathetic than sound like that jerk that makes something out of,
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, like, I'm the same way.
Like, the jerk is the, like, if you're on your own at home thinking of an idea for a script, like, you're thinking it out, and technically in your head it's developing.
Right.
But what you say out loud to a person is, I'm in development on a script, which means a network has given you money to write a script, which is very different than, I'm just sitting at home thinking about writing a thing. And, but I've known those people that have been, or like, if you've written a script that you personally can imagine being on HBO, but what comes out of your mouth is, I'm writing a script for HBO.
I suppose it's not a lie.
There are those, you know, when you think so positively that you're lying. like that's not manifesting.
Right. Well, that's one thing that drives me nuts about Hollywood is all that
spiritual
positive thinking. Shit will manifest itself. Like, people always say that stuff to me, and the first thing that I say is, well, why don't, instead of manifesting a job for yourself, you know, your pilot being produced or whatever, why don't you manifest, like, no more world hunger? Like, if you have that fucking power, like, why not put it to good use?
You're a genie.
Fix global warming.
Interesting. You know? That's not how it works.
No, I know. It's got to be, genies, they only grant you personal wishes. Right? I can't do world peace for you.
I'm going to defend those people for a moment. Right. I'm going to tear them down
and then defend it
in a way, because I teach meditation.
Right.
So I'm kind of lumped in that group of...
I don't know if meditation's necessarily
good.
But okay.
Thank you. I will say I'm at least tangential. Because I've seen things that are... And this makes me laugh. Like, the ALS challenge, and people are making money for this charity, and it was a great idea for a charity, and it raised a ton of money. And then people are going, it's bad that people are... Did you see that? There's, like, backlash of, like... ALS isn't killing us the way heart disease is. We should be doing this. Or, like, there's a drought. People should stop. Or I've seen, like, there are so many things about positive thinking. I've seen articles that are like, positive thinking is actually bad. Now, here's where I support the notion of manifesting, which is some of us come from a baseline, like, negative attitude, or like a baseline, I'm not good enough.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of people come from an I'm not good enough state. Mm-hmm. So I would posit that let's say just generic person, I'm not good enough. Under the surface, they're functioning people, but just under the surface is like, oh, I'm probably not good enough for that.
Right.
But they have big dreams. I want to have $1 million. I want to act in movies. I want to be on TV. I want to do all these things. But there's a lingering, they don't even know they have this belief of like, I don't know, but maybe I can't. Maybe I'm not good enough.
Mm.
Then manifesting and positive thinking is so good for that person.
Hi, oh, excuse me. Hillary and Colby.
Realize that was up so
first
loud.
Of all, I love that you have an old-timey
answering machine.
Like, a sitcom plot could work in your house. Like, once we had voicemail, especially visual voicemail, I was like, oh my god, that's the plot of half sitcoms of like,
oh, yeah.
I left that message, I have to go get that tape back.
I know. There's no, it's like horror movies don't work anymore. Unless you set them in the 70s, which most of them is like The Conjuring was set in the 70s. And like there was another one last year that was set like in the
80s. That's so true.
You can't set anything. I like had this idea for an ad campaign for cell phones where that would be the thing. You'd take a movie trope. Where, you know, it, like, that's how they explain it when they're lost in the woods. Where it's like, the phone, I'm not getting any service.
Yeah.
You do that where everyone's panicked, but one guy's like, it's no problem, guys, I got service. The cops are going to be here in 15 minutes. I'm actually ordering a pizza. What do you guys want, you know?
I'm glad I got this Flare app. Yeah. I'll just shoot up some flares.
Yeah, exactly.
You guys, everybody on Facebook knows that we're stuck in the woods and that there's a guy who's been killed 16 times chasing us, so somebody will come.
Somebody's going to come.
You guys, I just tweeted the funniest Bigfoot.
Or like a guy in the space shuttle where they go out of communication for that minutes.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And he's not. I've got service.
I got a couple bars.
I'm fine. I'm fine. No, Houston, I'm still here.
Houston, there's no problem.
There's no problem.
It's actually extra bars because I'm so close to the satellite.
Service is great.
That's really funny. Yeah. AT&T service is incredible in space.
But before the phone rang,
funny. No, I was defending positive thinking, which is, so there are some people who can't sort of imagine a different reality for themselves. And to that, I would say, if you can't even imagine it or say it, it may not happen because you're still living, you're kind of living the past into the future of like,
I've never
really been successful, so I guess I'll always just kind of make minimum wage, or, you know, I'll never make over, whatever it is. But when people manifest and they're like, you know, like saying out loud, even though it feels stupid, like, I make $100,000 a year, I am making, I am starring on a TV show, or I am whatever it is, I think they can actually change their reality because their mind starts to consider a different option because they're introducing a new thought.
I see what you're saying. I mean, so that makes sense.
I'm a fan of that until people go insane. And I do think there's, like, with anything, there's a balance to it. Because I do think some people are like, no, man, no, it's crazy. And then they take on a weird hippie persona that's not
well,
grounded
and then
in reality.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think having a positive self-image is important. And mm-hmm. if that's what, like, if that's the trip to your switch that you need, mm-hmm. then great. It's like anything. It's like spirituality, religion, mm-hmm. like if it works for you. But then when you're putting it on other people, that's when religion and spirituality it's like one of the things that happens is mm-hmm. someone will get cancer. And it's because they manifested that through negative thinking.
Oh, right.
Versus it's cancer. And that's what it is.
It's a genetic.
And there's not, and you can't necessarily positively think your way out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then people will have terminal cancer and blame themselves for having terminal cancer because they aren't thinking positively enough.
Yeah.
And that, it just makes everything worse. But that is a real, you know, outcropping side effect, whatever you want to call it, of this manifestation
concept.
That's
taking a real extrapolation into a shameful place.
Right. That's all I'm saying about that. But I mean, and the truth is you can't positive think yourself into anything.
Mm.
I mean, I think the reality is, you got a dream. And you can't negate your dreams, and you can't think I am not, especially in Hollywood, think I'm not good enough for that.
Mm-hmm.
I think a man's got to know his limitations, as Clint Eastwood's Dirty Harry said in Magnum Force.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you got to know. I mean, like, I dabbled in stand up in college, mm-hmm. and I said, you know what? I don't think I'm a stand up comic. I think I'm an actor. I really mm-hmm. like stand up comedy, and I respect stand up comedians. And I respected the form, and I enjoyed it to a degree. But then I was mm-hmm. like, I don't know if this is, like, my strength.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe, like, when I'm old, and I'll revisit it as, like, a hobby. You know?
This is for old people. Maybe when I'm old,
maybe
I'll come back.
Maybe when I'm old. Well, no, it wasn't really like that. Funny. It was more I really like it, but I need to concentrate on acting.
I'm told Greg Garcia did that. And he went on to create My Name is Earl and...
Right.
You know, hopefully... Like, yeah, it's... or what is it called? Hope...
Hope and...
The Hope One with the baby.
I don't know.
Whatever. The Hope One with the baby.
Hope Baby.
Yeah, Hope Baby on Fox. it kind of was called Hope Baby. But yeah, it's, I think that's really smart and I was in acting classes for years and I was like, I think I'm a writer. I was like, this feels weird. I was like, I was like, some people are way more into this than I am.
But I think that's an important thing.
It's really
important. And that is not negative. That's practical. And that's knowing yourself and learning and understanding things about yourself. I think saying, you know, if you have decided that you're an actor and you can act,
mm-hmm.
like saying to yourself, well, but I'll never do that, isn't necessarily the right thing to do.
Right. Yeah.
But it's like we were saying before. I mean, I think if you're open and you just want to surf whatever story on whatever mm-hmm. level that you can and you're invited to, then that's all the positive you really need to be. I mean, I think it can be frustrating if you're spending all your time trying to manifest stardom. You know, and
taking acting classes.
And it's, yeah, and it's not.
That can also be another problem.
Yeah, and it's not happening for you. But even if you are taking acting classes, you're a great actor and you're a positive thinker and you want to serve the story, mm-hmm. that doesn't necessarily lead to stardom.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking earlier with my boyfriend who I live with is like, he, several times a week, he looks at the TV and goes, come on! What? How did this? how does this get on? And like, yeah. I can almost always tell you. I like, it's not a mystery to me at all how things get on TV air, yeah. And the fact that it's not a meritocracy. Like what? This doesn't even make sense. I'm like, yeah, but he, for example, and this isn't, this is just the example I'm yanking out of my head.
Right.
But like, well, because that guy helped make the show Lost. So that guy gets to do this show. And that's how
yeah,
it works.
Well, that,
you
yeah,
know, like,
yeah.
This guy, like, people will push you out of the way to buy J.J. Abrams' worst idea. They would rather have J.J. Abrams' worst idea. Even if J.J. Abrams were to go, this is probably a terrible idea, that's going to sell better than, like, this is Laura House's best idea she can possibly
that's,
have.
That's true.
At times. Yeah. Sometimes.
Yeah, until he makes enough movies that are only good for 20 minutes.
But he makes enough good that the, you know, like, not even to argue him.
Well, he makes a lot of, now he's a franchise king.
Yeah,
so there's like,
yeah. But it is like, it's so funny. Like, one time I watched a movie with a friend, I think he was trying out Hollywood lingo. Because he goes, at the end of it, he didn't enjoy it. I thought it was great. But he goes, who greenlit that? And I was like, the person who wanted to make a lot of money because because this person, the last movie they directed, made a lot of money. That's how things get greenlit.
Yeah. Like, that's like, how it got, yeah.
That's not weird at all. That's how business
that
works.
Makes sense. Yeah.
It's just like,
the greater question, yeah. I think usually is like, what, like, you had this opportunity to do this. Why was this your stupid idea that you could get greenlit no matter what?
Yeah.
Why this?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's...
M. Night, why The Happening?
Oh, M. Night!
Why a horror movie about light breezes terrifying marketing? Why? They were gonna make whatever you wanted.
Yeah.
But why that?
M. Night, what were you thinking? I also love the casualness. M. Night. May I call you M?
M, come here. M. Night, yes, you.
Yeah.
Come here. Tell me, M, like...
M, walk me through this.
What's the deal, M, with the aliens in Signs being allergic to water? Why would they come here? The whole planet's covered in water.
70% water.
I mean, they had to have seen that
they
from space.
They must have known it's mostly blue.
What else could that be?
What did they think the blue was? Yeah. Oh, my God. It's so funny. I love yelling at the TV. That's maybe my favorite thing.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic.
And I'm very lucky that I live with someone who also enjoys them.
Yeah. My wife and I we both like watching, like, junk movies.
Yes.
So we can yell at them.
Yes.
And we enjoy that.
You know what we watched a couple weeks ago? Mad Max.
Oh, the original?
We had never seen it.
Uh-huh.
And we went through one of those very privileged conversations of, like, we ended up with a night off. And we don't usually he's seeing a play or I'm doing a show or we do something. And so we were kind of like, oh, you like,
hi.
Kind of like, what do people do? You know, like, you're usually just like, bye, I love you. Bye. Bye. See you later. Okay. Bye. Good night. Hello. Good morning. Goodbye. Gotta go. Do you want coffee? And this was like, what do we order food? And like, whoa, this is crazy. And so we decided to, we're like, let's watch something on Netflix and went through the, like, oh, I saw it, but I'd see it again. No, not if you've seen it, blah, blah. And so we ended up at Mad Max and I was like, I never actually saw it. And he was like, I never did either.
Had you seen like the sequels or anything?
No, I'd never seen, I missed that whole thing. And so we were just like, this is amazing. Cause you have to find, and somebody told me this, he was divorcing, but he goes, you have to find someone you love to watch TV with.
That's
a happy marriage.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think it is because we can both enjoy it and hate on it equally. So like if somebody's going, oh my God, that's so dumb. The other person isn't going, well, I mean,
right.
I was kind of enjoying it. Like, could you,
right.
Like very rarely, every now and then there's a like, will you just let me watch Doctor Who?
Yeah.
Hypothetically.
Not
hypothetically. I scream that at him once a week.
Yeah, he doesn't like Doctor Who.
Well, he'll start to get into it, and now I don't even let him. I'm like, no.
Because at some point he'll say
something. No, you've made fun of Doctor Who too much.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I understand.
Like, you don't even understand Doctor
Who. There are some instances where... because there are dumb movies that I don't want to question because I've seen them 87 times or whatever, that I just like this dumb movie that I want to watch again.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, my wife will ask a question, like, well, wait a sec, And I've learned that all I have to do, it doesn't matter what my answer is, as long as it comes on the heels of it, so it sounds like something I know. Then she'll accept, like, whatever cockamamie
reason.
Yeah, it's good.
Oh,
it's
that's good. Really but, yeah. funny.
But usually we're watching stuff that we haven't seen before, and then it's, you know, it's a free-for-all.
So oh, I, yeah. You know.
I was, like, we had to, we started that the other night when we put on The Hangover 3.
Oh.
We started that. Like, what? Like, what? Like, why? And
what? Why? And,
we got 30 minutes into it, and we're both going, this is the most racist, misogynistic thing I've ever seen in my life. And, like, and we were both, like, it just sucked our life. It was, like, it was like a Skeksis, and we were Gelflings from the Dark Crystal, and it was sucking out our life. There's a reference.
Wow.
Sucking out our life force.
Oh, wow.
You know, so they could drink it and feel better about themselves.
Wow. So you did not enjoy it.
I liked the first Hangover movie.
All right.
And the second one I didn't care for. But this one I found, like, deeply and utterly offensive.
Like, it could have just been called Hangover 3, We're Just Getting Richer and Richer.
Yeah. And we hate minorities and women. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't
think
I saw it. They're in Thailand, right?
That's the second one.
Oh, gosh. I didn't even, and I don't even know. Are they in space? What's the third one? I mean, once you go to Thailand.
That would have been
where do you go after
so
that? You'd have to, like, go,
better.
Like,
yeah.
Hangover 4, Pluto. It is a planet. And, Zach Galifianakis is just obsessed that it's still a planet.
And animals. They hated animals. It started.
Flash.
We only got 30 minutes into it before we shut it off.
Yeah. Oh, good for you.
We put on Tremors instead.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's snakes under the ground.
Yeah. There's nothing new under the sun, but under the ground.
There's giant snakes. Was that their tagline?
That was the tagline.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
It was a really good poster, too. It was like a really tiny Kevin Bacon, really tiny Fred Ward, and whatever the lady's name is, the short lady, and then like a giant worm coming up from under the ground. And they're all like dumb. They don't know what's coming. And I said, oh, that was the tagline. It's a good poster.
It's so good.
Yeah.
I've really enjoyed talking to you today on your podcast.
Well, thanks for having me. My podcast.
And thank you guys for listening to the Toncast with my guest today. We're so excited you could make it, Todd Robert Anderson.
Well, thanks for having me. It was great.
So nice.
Yeah.
A lot of showbiz tips.
You can make it.
And positive thinking, but not too positive because that's obnoxious.
Keep it real.